Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it is a credit union, not just a bank, so it belongs to you. For more information, go to www.mecu.com. Or you can go up to steinershow.org and click on their banner, and all the information will be there right away. Monday, we're back, flipping back into our schedule, Anthony and Mark together.
I've been looking forward to it all day.
Me too, man.
Yeah.
And, of course, Anthony, you can hear every Friday at the same time slot, 5 to 7 p.m. And he always brings a really powerful show together. But right now we're about to have a conversation with David Brinkley, State Senator, Republican, District 4, Carroll and Frederick Counties, and Heather Mazier, State Delegate from District 20, Montgomery County. The budget crisis, we've spent the first half of the session arguing about marriage equality, now the budget is facing everybody. Let's go to the phones here, 410-319-8888, if people want to join us. And let me just ask the two of you, starting with David and then go to Heather, what you see as the state of where we are, and what are we going to do with a $1 billion deficit? Senator Miller says that the gas tax is a non-starter for him, other things may not be able to be raised. And people talk about we don't want to tax people who are making $100,000 or more a year with more. So then what do we do? What do you cut? Education again? David Brinkley?
Well, the Senate is it's good to be on the show. Thanks for having me
on. Good to have you on always.
The Senate's going to take up the budget first this year. We alternate every year. And there is no real clear path defined at this point in time. The President of the Senate has put a lot of options on the table. The House, I guess a lot of people don't quite understand that we tackle the budget on parallel tracks. We're doing hearings maybe just a day apart or whatever, but the House is already working on some of their ideas separately, but they have to wait for our version of the bill to come over first. And so the President of the Senate has offered a couple different solutions. He really doesn't know where the votes, I think, lie at this point in time. I was having a conversation with a television reporter earlier today, and he said, you know, in the way he's seen it, we could end up delaying, adjourning, you know, on sine die until we actually deal with the budget. And the reason is the Senate has to deal with it. The House has to deal with it. There are political fights in both chambers to be dealt with. Then we have to reconcile the differences, and perhaps some of those political fights will start all over again as they try to round things up. The Senate's tackling this from a couple different, sources. In fact, tomorrow at 9 o'clock, the Budget and Tax Committee is coming in, which is a little unusual to do that on a Tuesday morning. Normally all the caucuses are meeting, and they're laying out the so-called doomsday budget, as the President of the Senate likes to call that. But he's doing that with certainly threats implied to get people to vote for a massive tax increase. I suspect, I don't know this, but I suspect that the budget will be advanced with a lot of reductions imposed upon it contingent on the failure of the revenue bill. And the revenue bill likely will be Senator Mano's bill to roll back Governor Glendening's tax cuts from 1997. And I know that there's also an amendment pending that would add a millionaire's tax on top of that. So we'll have to see. We have our work cut out for us. There are a lot of opportunities. There are a lot of challenges in front of us. And, you know, a couple of us have advocated for years and years that the budget can be balanced without tax increases, but it certainly is going to call for some difficult choices across the board. And I'll just close with this, then let, you know, Heather take over. The interesting thing is Governor O'Malley champions the fact that he's cut $7 billion from the budget. Well, he hasn't. The budget is greater than when it was when he came in. And the way I do my books at my household, the way you do yours, if it's greater than when he came in, there's more revenue going on. He's championing the fact that he says that he has cut the rate of increase. Well, that doesn't count in my book, and it shouldn't count in yours. So, you know, but we'll see where it ends up. We've got a lot of work ahead of us, and I'm looking forward to the challenge.
Heather.
Thanks again, Mark, and it's always great to be here with you, and you as well, Senator Brinkley. I think every legislator is keenly aware of the tough times that everyone in this state is facing right now. Maryland families are making tough decisions about putting groceries back on the shelf and deciding not to go to the movies and taking on more debt because their paychecks aren't going as far as they used to go. And in that context, there's a lot of sensitivity to the decisions that are made here on what needs to be done to close the budget. And as you mentioned, we're facing a billion dollar deficit, and we have seen year to year similar deficits in the past 4 or 5 years, and we've been able to close them. But all the easy decisions have been made. We've done what we could to close these gaps year after year, and some of the federal assistance that came through in a couple of years ago with the stimulus package is gone, and that's why we're faced with some of these really, really challenging decisions. There are cuts on the table. This is not just a budget that proposes no cuts. There are also some revenue raisers on the table that aren't super controversial, but they don't get us to balance, and that's where we start having to have conversations about whether or not there should be some increases in income tax. You're seeing right now a difference between everyone. The House has an approach, the Senate has an approach, the governor has an approach. The Senate approach so far seems to be, as Senator Brinkley said, coalescing around the notion of rolling back the Glendening tax brackets, the tax cut that was doled out in 97, and rolling those rates back. And that would be something that would hit families across the board. The House is being a little more sensitive to targeting the revenue to upper-income earners as a way to close the gap. And I have been suggesting, and many progressives in our caucus have been suggesting, a range of revenues that haven't exactly been brought up on the table yet either. Options like the millionaire's tax, options like combined reporting. There are 68 profitable corporations that paid no state income taxes anywhere in the nation over the last 3 years. And six of those, including Pepco, which can't even keep the lights on in our state, does significant business in Maryland. And it's hard for us to understand why a small business owner in Rockville or Lanham who can't hide their profits in Delaware to avoid taxes, why a company like Comcast or Pepco should be allowed to do that. So there are other options on the table. We are good at multitasking in the General Assembly, and I think you'll see us coming up with a range of solutions that will get support before the end of the session.
Delegate Mazura, this is Anthony McCarthy. I have a question for you, and I appreciate if the senator would chime in as well. The governor really has laid out a Herculean task for you all. And as we were going over the budget on this program and my program, we noticed there would be some instances where responsibilities for certain things will be shifted to localities. But one thing that we know for certain is that there has to be a little bit, I'm giving you all a lot of credit here, a little bit of politics played in how some of these issues are going to be resolved. But as we find ourselves with such a huge deficit, and I know that others have told me not to overstate that it's not as unusual as it seems when you talk about a $1 billion deficit. But how are the two sides, small Republican minority and large Democratic majority, going to be able to come together and give people of Maryland the confidence that in these tough economic times, you all are willing to make some really tough choices with a little bit of politics having to do with it?
Well, we've shown in the past that we've been able to do it. We're one of nine states that have maintained a AAA bond rating mm-hmm. in these tough economic times, and we have a record and a history in this state of making tough choices and doing the right thing for Maryland, for all of Marylanders. And I think this year's budget pressures are going to be no exception. You want in your legislative body to be a tussle of ideas and throwing out a range of options and seeing where the public reacts and seeing where you can coalesce support. And at the end of the day, you're going to find us coming together on an approach that will get us there. I truly believe that.
Senator Brinkley?
Well, it's interesting. this governor, I've referred to him a couple times as the hockey referee governor. He comes on the ice, he drops the puck, and he gets the hell out of town. And he did it during the special session. I was the minority leader at the time. He comes out and proposes all the 20% increase in the sales taxes and the income tax and the titling fee and this and that and the other thing. And he got out of Dodge. He even did that against the recommendations and advice of the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House. He's done the same thing here. He throws everything out on the table. He is really pushing for the reduction in the allowable deductions and exemptions. He's taken a pretty hard stand on that. And we've seen, you know, with the realtors coming down, the issues with home ownership and the challenges that Maryland families are facing with that. And I think, and you know, Heather, correct me if I'm wrong, I think there's some consensus between the House and the Senate in not taking away those type of deductions and exemptions. I know that's the sense over here. So, you know, there are conversations trying to get us across the finish line. But at the same time, he has continued to kick the can down the road, deal with it another year later, deal with it another year later. We have spent twice on some programs. Program Open Space, the new helicopters that we're purchasing for medical evac and for police missions in this state. If your listeners will remember, they pay a portion of their titling fee, not the titling fee, when they do their vehicle registration. Mm-hmm. Into the helicopter replacement fund. That fund was then raided to balance the budget last year, and it was backfilled by selling bonds. So what we've done, it's equivalent to you create a Christmas fund, you put money aside every month, and then come Thanksgiving, you take that to pay the mortgage, and then put the Christmas bills and everything else on the credit card. That's exactly what's happened with that. That's what's happened with Program Open Space and a couple other funds that they have lined up. Yes, we'll get across the finish line ultimately, but to what extent do we start this dance again next year remains to be seen. Delegate Meiser has referenced a couple of the ideas that some of the progressives have talked about in the past over and over and over again. But remember, we also have an economy that has been struggling, businesses that have been having a very challenging time there. And my main mission, and I think that she wouldn't disagree with this, where we might disagree is how do we get there, is our top mission is to get people back on the payroll, get people back to work. We like to hear that people have the money to pay their taxes. But Maryland families are stressed out as it is with the economy the way it is. And, you know, the sad part is, and there's some discrepancy. I know she'll disagree with me on this. But, you know, the millionaires, they can vote with their feet, and they frequently do. And they can pack up and go off. Now, you can criticize someone for having done well in life. Either they've earned it or they've inherited it. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. But for the most part, those individuals do create jobs. We want their capital to stay in the state. We want those jobs to come back here. And we don't want to start a class warfare to push those jobs away.
I think that some people look at what's going on with the state budget right now and this battle in the legislature and think that many people in the House and the Senate are dancing around the edges of the reality of what we're facing. And I think the difference is that it seems to be there's a real ideological difference on what a government should do and how you get there. I think that seems to be really part of the root of the issue here to me. I mean, because some people would argue, on my show last week was arguing that we should raise the budget by expanding the sales tax to the industries that are not covered, given the new economy we're in, to bring more revenues in. The corporate taxes, as I think Heather Mazier talked about earlier, and argued that we should start putting some payroll, some taxes and levies on non-wage income, like capital gains, profits, rents, dividends, interest, to raise the money, because that's where the wealth lives. And then the other side would say, no, what we need to do is just cut back. You need less money for schools, and we should just let local governments take over most of the stuff, and that the state government is just going to have to bite the bullet and come back. I don't see how you – the middle ground, it seems to me, is not answering the question. Not that I want to get to the extreme fringes, but the middle ground doesn't seem to be answering the questions.
Well, the problem you have, if you look at it from a partisan point of view, look, I mean, the Democrats rule down here from a partisan point of view. I mean, I can, you know, sometimes I look down the tunnel and I hope it's the, you know, it's the daylight at the end of the tunnel, not a train coming the other way. If I'm going to press something strictly along partisan lines, right now, the way the makeup is in this state, Republicans don't come out on top. But that's, so the issue becomes more ideological versus a conservative legislator versus a more liberal, or some people call them progressive legislators. The fact is, you know, I'm running for Congress in the Western Maryland.
I heard
one
that.
One of the lines out there is, it's a tax holiday a mile away. You know, you cross into West Virginia or Pennsylvania, and you don't have to pay a lot of the taxes that Maryland imposes. Talk to Cumberland, and, you know, they have slot machines right across the river down there.
Of course, you don't want to drive in Pennsylvania roads. You won't have a car left.
Well, but, you know, if you want to go buy your clothes, a lot of people, when they want to buy clothes in my area, in Frederick County and all, where do they go? They go to the outlets up in Gettysburg. There's no sales tax on clothing up there.
Right, and I understand that. Let me just ask Heather, because I'll tell you why I'm pushing this in a second, and you'll both understand once I tell you. But, Heather, I'd like you to respond very quickly, if you could.
Yeah, I think that there are multiple ways of looking at the notion of voting with your feet. 84% of our budget is education, public safety, and health care. And if you don't want to raise revenue someplace, you're going to have to talk about where to make these cuts. The investments we have made in those areas are the reasons why high-income earners and CEOs and millionaires choose to come to Maryland. They're not leaving Maryland. They're coming here because they want their children educated in the best schools in the nation, because they want to play and enjoy the Chesapeake Bay that continues to rebound its blue crabs and oysters. They continue to come to the state because we have high-quality health care at affordable rates, and we continue to tackle the problem of the uninsured, taking away that hidden tax on people. Our premiums are in better shape, and health care premiums are in better shape in Maryland than most states, because we don't have as many uninsured people coming into the emergency rooms, and that's something that everyone with health insurance ends up having to pay for. There is a notion of having people vote with their feet, and I would argue that they're voting to come into Maryland, that they're staying here, they're coming to create jobs here, and you're going to see improvement in the unemployment numbers yet again in the next batch of numbers for our state. You look at Maryland vis-a-vis all the other states, not only in our region but in the nation, we're doing a dang good job.
So let me, Senator Brinkley, David Brinkley, and Delegate Heather Mazur, I apologize for what we're about to do. We have to take a break.
Oh, come on. You're having fun.
Because we've just had news that is just coming through. This breaking news, I think, that we have to go to. And it is that young girl who was 13 years old who was found shot to death, they've just arrested 12-year-old boys for the murder.
Wow.
Two boys.
12 and 13.
12 and 13. So my deepest apologies to the two of you, or public servants. We will come back clearly to the budget this week and next week, because it's a subject where I think we have to switch and talk to the community about what just happened.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you both.
Thank you both so much. So, Anthony and I deeply appreciate our delegates always in the Senate being willing to come on our programs. But, Anthony.
You know, Mark, over the weekend, we got word on late Saturday night, actually it was early Sunday morning, that a 13-year-old girl from the Darley Park community was missing. She went out that evening, Saturday evening, to be with friends and to roller skate. Around about 1 a.m., her family reported her missing to the police. Within hours, her family, brothers, were out combing the community, combing the neighborhoods, going through alleys, and one of her brothers did discover her body. It had been hidden under some bags of garbage in an alley in Darley Park. I'm sorry I'm getting so emotional.
That's all right, man. It's okay.
But unfortunately, as you just said, we heard breaking news.
Just
a half hour ago, that two boys, 1 12 and 1 13, have been taken into custody. They will be charged as juveniles in the murder of this 13-year-old. Her name is Monet Turnage.
Monet Turnage. Folks, you can join Anthony and I here now at 410-319-8888. Anthony and me now, 410-319-8888. Write to us here, steinershow@gmail.com, 410-319-8888. We want to get your thoughts and feelings at this moment of what's happened. Anthony talked in his show Friday about the tragic death of the 5-year-old girl who was killed at the hands of her father for wetting her pants. We see this now, 12 and 13-year-old boys being arrested for the murder. They're being charged, as you said, with involuntary manslaughter. There's something amiss and on lots of levels here. And we'd like to just hear what you think and reflect about where our community is. Please go ahead, Anthony.
Yeah, I was going to say, Mark, as you and I do, we consume a lot of information and consume a lot of news. And I was amazed by the conversations that were taking place on Facebook and on the Sunspot page for the Baltimore Sun newspaper. People were asking a lot of tough questions about this child and why she was out late. Her mother was interviewed and was broadcast that she was out with friends and that that she was this a very outgoing young girl, but they knew it had to be some other kids and that they knew it was some children that she knew. So obviously there was information in that community, Mark, that was circulating among folks about the death of this child. Councilman Carl Stokes, who, as most people know, I associate with and work for, released a statement this morning saying, please, somebody knows something. The police need this information to solve this. And within hours, Mark, they've obviously, but as you said, on many levels, I guess my heart breaks at the thought of two children being accused. And, you know, they haven't been convicted of anything, but certainly charged with murdering this 13-year-old girl. As you said, there is something amiss in our system. There's something amiss in our community. And with the level of dysfunction and despair, and I hate to even speak this way, but I hope our callers will call in and become part of this conversation. Mark, a lot of people are not surprised that we see this crumbling of our family in our community, that with unemployment at just extraordinary numbers in the city.
Especially in poor working,
class communities. The level of drug abuse, the level of depression and mental health issues, the level of just despair that a lot of families are facing. The case last week that you spoke of about the 5-year-old that was beaten to death by her father, and many people in that community calling out saying, look, this family was in trouble for a while. And so we just need for folks to all of us are in this together. And so the dialogue is a very important if we're willing and able to begin to solve this problem. Children should live in a community. They should live in homes where they are safe and secure. But increasingly, there seems to be this crisis when it comes to the health and well-being of our children in this city.
I just really want to know what you all are thinking, 410-319-8888, and where we are. I mean, what happens, what's happening in our culture where teenagers, the young man who opened fire on the school, killing three classmates,
mm-hmm.
What turns a 12 or 13-year-old, if in fact they did this, into being able to murder another child? And what is happening as things can begin to crumble in certain communities. And the heart and soul of this is our children, you know, and you see what allows a grown man to beat his daughter, what allows any of this to take place, and what we can do to change that, what we can do to reach out. Go ahead, Dan.
And another part of the interesting dynamic of this and the heartbreak as you analyze this as people were doing today, and I was having these exchanges with folks, Mark, was the way her body was discarded.
Yeah.
She was found in an alley under garbage bags by her own brother, found her. We spoke with Major Russell, who's the commander, the major of the Eastern District, and he said they were moving very quickly. And he also put the call out to the community. Because, Mark, as much as we'd like to believe things like this happen in isolation, they don't. And whether someone heard something happen, this little girl, if the news reports are right, these two boys shot and murdered this child. And that not only was she shot, but there was trauma to her body. And so this is deep. And we've got to find answers. Or unfortunately, Mark, I think we could fill up every hour, every day of your program and my program trying to figure out what's happening with our children.
We'll open the phones here. And I think that, you know, I think that sometimes we, our first reaction is to say we should be punishing these kids and people severely. And then people do have to deal with the consequences of their actions without a doubt. We also have to think, I think, about what needs to happen. How do we wrap our arms around children? A 12 or 13-year-old who commits a crime has yet to finish growing. They're still babies.
Their minds aren't even developed.
Their minds aren't developed yet. So when, if they, in fact, did this, and they become 25 and 30 years old, and they're in prison, what happens? Let's go to the phones. 410-319-8888. Join us here with your thoughts. Iris and Waverly, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi,
how
Iris.
Are you today?
Well, how are you?
Oh, upset.
Yeah.
I don't watch a lot of local news, so I heard about this first thing this morning from students of mine who knew the little girl. And I don't know, because I haven't looked into any kind of news about it, but they thought that she had also been raped. I don't know if that's part of this story.
We don't know. It was alluded to, but we don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. And I know that there have been at least three really, really, really young girls raped and killed in Baltimore in the past year. And I think a lot of it is just that we're not teaching our men to love. We're not teaching our men, like, positive ways to interact with the world around them. And we're teaching them that that, in fact, is specifically weak, and that if they really want to be men, they have to be violent. And we can't be very surprised when we end up here. But it's really tragic, and my heart goes out to her family, and especially that brother. I can't imagine that.
I was always good to hear from you. I'm sorry on a day like this. And I just want to say that on the way back to the phones very quickly here that I was on a panel Saturday with Kwame Kwayarma from Center Stage and David Ross, who's part of Fifth L. And we were, that was our panel. We were talking about men relating as men who are, want to call them feminists, want to call them whoever we want to call ourselves, who think about women, how we raise boys and girls. And part of it is our looking, the way we look at women, the way we raise our boys to be just kind of unfeeling and macho and not showing their feelings, not being able to, for the, that you, not only is finding strength in a warrior, it's not all about fighting, it's about taking care of community and others around you. And we've lost that.
And Mark, there was this time, and I heard that workshop was incredible. I had some young girls who are part of my faith community who were at that conference, and they said that it was really powerful to hear the voices of men speak positive and light into the lives of young girls. But Mark, it's a funny fine line, because a lot of men, the men I interact with and I talk to, I try to mentor, have been taught that hardness is one of the things they must pass on to their little boys, because the world can be a very heartbreaking place. And it's sad because I see men and families, Mark, sexualize little boys real early.
Yes.
Telling, oh, that's your girlfriend, or, you know, oh, I saw you looking at that woman. And we they're physical with their boys in ways that really try to teach them this real sad, dark violence that they think that is the existence of a black male or a male in our society. And we've got to break through that.
Well, go back to the phones here, Anthony, but there's a difference between hardness and strength.
Amen. That's it, Mark. Yeah.
You know, you could be hard when you need to be, but the strength of a man is not to be violent unless you have to defend something. 410-319-8888. Let's go to the phones here. Dr. Carter, you're on the air.
Dr. Carter?
Dr. Carter, you're on the air. Can we get the phones rolling here? Dr. Carter, you're on the air. All right, let's try Darnell, you're on the air.
What's going on?
Hi, Darnell. How are you?
First of all, I just want to get out to say that it seems this is a tragic accident. The two little boys were playing around with a gun, which is very bad, and it seemed like the gun went off. They got scared and pulled her to the alley. So I don't think it's an issue of these little boys being malicious.
Well, we don't know that. Nobody knows anything yet.
But that's what I just read on the report just now. When I was looking online to see what was going on, and they said the two little boys being charged with manslaughter and juvenile because they were playing around with a gun in the house, went off, shot her, and got scared and pulled her into the alley. So it seemed like this is a mistake and not them being.
Well, it could be, and I've seen. I'm reading the articles online, and we just don't know yet. We don't know the truth of any of it yet.
But even with that said,
yes.
Our society is really, 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 really going downward, and it seems like my thing is with the financial state of where we're in now, it changes the culture of the community because people don't get out anymore. They don't want to. Do things with each other anymore because, for one, they don't have any money. For two, they want to stay in a house. And it just seems like the culture of the whole society is going to change, along with the financial and then along with the families break it down because we have so many dysfunctional families now. We have so many men out here. I'm sorry to say it, but we have so many men out here that don't want to take any type of claim to their children.
Right.
They don't want to raise. They don't want to raise their children. They still want to be out in the streets and have fun, but they don't. You know, they don't want to raise their children. And then we're leaving to these women who are getting bogged down, and then certain morals are being missed because they're tired. They're tired.
Darnell, thank you.
Darnell, thank you. I appreciate your thoughts and comments. Look, we're going to take a very brief 1 minute break. We come right back, and when we return. We are going to go right to the phones, and Robert's on next, and we have Diane and Matt, Clarence. So we'll come to your call as soon as we return before we hit our next topic. Please stay with us. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
Let's jump right back to the phones, Anthony. And Robert, you're on the air.
Guys, my question speaks directly to the contrast between the first two callers' characterizations of what's going on. I'd like to think that these recent episodes are outliers, are exceptions to an upward trend, and the optimism and, you know, improvement in general in city communities, respect to violence. You know, over the last 15 years, I think generally the drug violence has abated somewhat with, you know, unfortunately maybe because cheap crystal meth is the planted expensive heroin. But anyway, I mean, what is the truth here? I want to be sensationalizing what is, you know, in the most literal sense, a very sensational story that's going on today. Are things getting better, and is this an exception, or is it mark of, you know, evidence of an uptick, and are things getting worse? What do you think? Thank you.
You know, it's a very good question, and certainly what we've seen in the last few years is a very serious drop in violent crime in the city. But in areas of our city, very specific areas of our city, where poverty is still not the exception, but is the rule for a lot of working class and lower income families, we see that violence persists. And they have a very difficult time, Mark, when I go give speeches or I'm out in the community and I talk about the 40-year low of violence and murder in our city. They say, come to my neighborhood. And certainly what we have seen, and will be borne out in all the statistics, is that violence among children continues to grow in our city. And even the arrest of children continues to grow in our city. And whether this was an accident, and as Mark said, as you said, Mark, we're going to find out the truth one way or the other. as they've been investigating, as been interviewing these boys and other people. I mean, there were some adults who were interviewed earlier today, and as the story was developing, what we are going, the truth of it, and I don't want to make it sensational. You know, as jaded as I am, Mark, this breaks my heart every time I hear a story like this about anyone who's murdered in our city. But even if it was an accident, we have a city that is awash, and the police commissioner has said this over and over again. We have a city that is awash in guns. And what we have here is a situation where, if true, and again, these boys have been charged and accused but not convicted, a 12-year-old and a 13-year-old that had a gun and that found a bullet found its way into the chest of a 13-year-old girl.
And if, in fact, I'm looking around for this accidental shooting, I haven't found it, but if, in fact, it was accidental, I mean, I spent years working as a therapist and counselor with kids in prisons and in our cities, with families. And if kids are this young, do something like that by accident, if they're taking a gun from their older brother or from their father's house or mother's house or wherever they happen to get it, and in fact, this was an accidental shooting, I'd be the first one to say those little boys shouldn't be jailed. They need to be put in an institution where they can be helped to be brought back, because the pain they're going to carry from that act. But we don't know the whole story. And we unfold, we need to talk as a community about what should happen. And not just, it needs to be a community discussion, I think, about this. And it's not just up to the legal judicial system to deal with this. It, all of us have to deal with this. Diane, you're on the air. Diane, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Diane. Welcome.
How y'all doing?
Very well.
And thank you for what you just said, because that is so true. You know, so many of our children go into the wrong prison, and they could be rehabilitated back into society if this is an accident. But I do know the little girl. I know her family. We all belong to the church, my old church. We all used to go there. And that was her aunt that was on television talking. Mm. And that was her uncle who and her brother that found her. They all came together when they said that she was missing. They had called the police, and they said, wait 24 hours. He went out looking for his niece. That was their uncle. And he said that when he saw her, his heart just dropped down, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know anything else, just what you all saying and everything and what he said on the news that he found his niece, you know. And, you know, I think she has two brothers and everything, because, like, I remember when they first started coming to church, they were little children and stuff like that, you know. So my heart goes out to the family and everything. And, you know, we all, as a family and as a society, we need to work together. What it is, it's so much violence around us as, you know, society, even with the two wars that we had. Well, one just ended in Iraq, you know, and rumors of wars. We have to teach our children that this is not the way to settle any kind of, you know,
right,
conflict or anything, you know. And the men have to get more involved in young men's lives and let them know that you have to treat women a certain way. And the same thing with females. We have to tell our young girls that we don't accept everything that a man, you know, call us out our name. You know, don't accept that, you know. And we all play a part in what has happened and what has not happened.
Diane, thank you so much. I share your reflections on this in that way. I think that we really have to put our hands around our children, but put our hands around our young boys, I'm thinking about right now.
That's true, and we have to tell them that we love them every single day, even when they wake up in the morning, you know. Even if they do something and we think, you know, just still tell them, if you scold them, come back and say, you know, I did this because I love you, you know.
Right.
Just to let them know, and you know, because it's so much peer pressure. I know when we came along, our parents had a way to tell us if we went to jail because we was hanging around with somebody. We were too scared to do that. When we knew somebody did something, we backed away, you know. Because our parents, we were scared of our parents.
Diane, I appreciate you being part of the show, and so much for calling in. Mm-hmm. I think that you know, one of the things I've been thinking, Anthony, about this before we go back to the phones here is again, it's about our boys. You can grow strong men. You can grow boys into strong men without having them be full of violence. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the strength, you know, the first things, let's say you were in the martial arts. The very first thing you learn, if you listen, is this is not about violence. It's about finding peace and strength inside of yourself, which we have to impart upon our young boys, and respect for women, and that violent, we live in a violent culture, these video games, everything in their face is violent, violent, violent. And the, on top of that, the violence of poverty.
And Mark, these children witness unspeakable violence that is shrouded in silence.
Yeah.
Because we're taught that we are not to speak of these things that are going on in our homes, this violence that they're witnessing. And as you said, even the violence of poverty, this spirit of want and lack that too many of our children are filled with because they really do not have the resources to provide for their families, cannot provide for them in the way that they want. And Mark, it cannot be overstated. People say, oh, that's old-fashioned when you say, but Mark, it was very different when we grew up. Certainly there was poverty.
Yep.
Certainly there was difficulty, dysfunction. But as you said, you can turn on the television. You can go into the grocery stores. I was in the grocery store with a friend on Saturday morning, and I watched a woman speak to her daughter, and the daughter had to be about 7 or 8 years old, Mark, in a way that I would not dream of ever speaking to another human being, let alone a child. And we have real serious problems in our society. But there is this willingness. You can hear it even in our callers. There's this willingness to call it by its name and call it out so that we can begin the healing and the fixing of this problem.
And this whatever happens here, this is a time for healing and reflection for our entire community. We use this occasion for something to make us stronger and better, if we can. Let's go to Matt. You've been on the line for a while. You're on the air.
Yes. How you guys doing today?
Hi, Matt.
Very well. Welcome.
Yes. My heart goes out to the family. It really does. My thing is, have you ever seen fathers and little boys together, how the father's loving that little boy, you know, hugging him and giving him a kiss? I think what is missing when they start to grow up, the fathers forget about the love that they show, that they have to show to that young man, you know, to show him that, you know, I love you and I care about you. I mean, I think they lose that once, you know, this kid gets to that spot and Anthony put his hand on it where they start to show kids, you know, hey, dude, you got to be hard, you know, because the world is rough out here. You know, but the world is not all about, you know, being rough, because love brings everything together most of the time. If you teach your kid how to understand things and, you know, have a conversation with your kid about, you know, what life is and what life is about and what life is going to take you to or take you through, I think, you know, the young man would probably understand better. And, you know, with the mothers sitting around, you know, like you have these single mothers, you know, trying to raise a man and trying to, you know, give him everything to compensate for the father not being there, I think it causes more problems, you know, with that young man. So I think if the love is there from the father at the beginning, it needs to go all the way through that relationship, because I think that's what's missing is love in these young kids' lives. You know, even the girls, you know, just like, you know, Anthony was saying, you know, about, you know, I've seen several times mothers, you know, standing around talking to, you know, young kids, you know, talking, you know, if those young kids could stand back and cuss them out like they do them, I don't think that would happen. You know, we just need to have more respect.
Right.
Young kids, you know, and teach them a better way to go. But, you know, my heart goes out to the family, you know, and to the family of the young men, because, you know, it's a tragedy when they can even get a hold to a gun at 12 years old and 13. You know, I mean, so, the world is coming to a big, you know, explosion of everything, because we're not looking what's around us, the education. None.
Right.
You know.
Matt, I appreciate you being part of the show and bringing your sentiments to the airwaves. I think that, you know, what you say has huge validity and is very real. And we you know, I think that I've said this all the time. People say you're crazy, but I'll say it anyway. Again, Anthony and I were talking about it before we started this conversation. We're on the air today talking about this poor little girl being killed, whether it was involuntary or not, who was killed.
Right.
I'm gonna just throw it out there. I don't. First of all, I think we have violence in the home. I mean, to get angry with a child and discipline a child and straighten them out is one thing. I've never hit, I have three girls, four grandchildren. I've never hit any of them. I will not hit a child. I always go back to what this Apache woman said to me many, many years ago, was an old friend of mine, was a friend of mine back then, when she said to me, Apaches never hit their children because the children are the light of God, and you don't hit the light of God. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's get a couple more calls in before we have to take a break. Let us go to, she's been for a while and holding on here. Aaron, you're on the air. Hi, Aaron, you there? Go ahead.
Hello?
Aaron, you're on the air.
Oh, you, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Well, this day, obviously, because that incident happened in my community, has been a long day for me. And Anthony, as you know, we've done every effort we can. This is the second young person in our community.
That's right.
Which is happened.
Go ahead, Aaron.
Aaron, go ahead.
And, you know, the fact that these young people got a hold of a gun and did this thing is horrifying. At the same time, I would rather them not be demonized and thrown in jail. However, we've got to get a handle on these folks and these guns, and we've also got to look at what kind of resources are we providing for folk to be good parents, and in addition to that, the kind of education we need for folk to have guns with children in the house. And another thing that comes to mind, too, is that you've got to know where your children are at all times, especially at night.
Right.
And I don't. Also, I want to make this clear to folk. I don't want to get the impression out there that because of these two incidents in the last year that our community is some kind of bad place to live, because you have folk like myself and others in our community who work real hard at making our community a better place. And I think for folk to assume that this is a bad place is not exactly where we want to go either.
No, I hear you, Aaron. That's when last week we had a young man from Wind River Indian Reservation here to answer the New York Times, and a young man, Willow Pengree, and he said, you know, yeah, he read the article in the New York Times about the murder rate, the dropout rate, the abuse rate on his reservation. He said, oh, I'm living in such a dangerous place. I didn't even know it. And he was talking about the beauty of his place as well.
And
we have to focus.
Here.
We have to focus on the beauty of our communities and bring that to light.
And as Anthony knows, who's been here, we work really hard at trying to do that.
You really do, Aaron.
You do. And I know you, Aaron, and I know you've been working hard for your community.
For a long time.
For a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I
think what part of it is that these families need not just our prayers, but our support. And in addition to that, I think, yes, we need to examine what happened. But right now, for the sake of this family, we need not place blame on them either at this point.
No, I think that does nobody any good. I think and the last thing a family needs who lost a child is to have people heaping on them about other stuff at this point. Aaron, thank you so much for being part of the show.
And for our listeners, Aaron Wilkes is the president of the Darley Park Community
Association
and has been a longtime advocate for not just this community, but for children and neighborhoods across the city. And is a frequent caller to my program.
And mine.
On yours, on all types of subjects.
I appreciate his comments always. 410-319-8888. We will go to Jim. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Jim.
Yeah, you know, I listen to the station, contribute to the station, and if I went back and I played 10 different programs in a row, basically we're saying the same thing over and over. And I'm 76 years old, and my mother died of substance abuse. And there was only two places you could get dope, and that was on Pennsylvania Avenue and Emerson Avenue. And when the little black boys start knocking the doors down, and they were telling the folks that they were putting it in the toilet, the man that was giving it to them said, I don't believe they're putting it in the toilet. So they put them out on the corner, and he wrapped them in the Constitution. Mm. Now, no community can grow when all the groups are taking money out of the community. We got 2,000 churches taking it, and we got the monopoly of the Koreans and the stores taking it. And then the drug dealers, they're the biggest offenders because they go up and down and spend $450 for a jacket that I've been in business since '67. I know the cost of about $90 to make. You cannot function in the community with rhetoric. You have to have money circulating there. And in our communities now, we have no black entrepreneurs. All we do is hear people talking. We see no black people behind the counter. We see no blacks with ownership. And the only successful people that we see to talk about is the drug dealer. The biggest, richest black right now in the country is probably Jay-Z, and he's a dope dealer. You understand? So, if, you know, I was up on the corner of Garrison and Avenue at the Supreme store. And now I'm a handicapped, and I asked the fellow, which he was a Muslim, I knew that, to go inside and put my order in so that I didn't have to get out and get back in. And he said to me, sir, I can't go in there. I said, well, aren't you Muslim? He said, yeah, but I don't think back here. That's our problem. We got 265 different religions among a group of people that's only 13% of the population. How do you define common ground?
All right.
Wow. You know, Mark, I was thinking as he was speaking about the fact that people talk, they call our program and they talk about, we have so many ideas, so much wisdom among all people in this city. And Baltimore gets a really bad rap, and you and I have talked about the problems in this city. But, Mark, I cannot help but believe that there are solutions to these problems. And people articulate them every time we come on the air. There has got to be a way for us to move from rhetoric to solutions. And I have stood on the corners. Mark, I've been in Baltimore nearly 22 years. And I cannot tell you the number of times I've had to stand on corners because a child has been murdered.
Right.
And you just stand there and you demand answers and you want change. And as this caller just said, here we are yet again. And I don't know. Maybe it's just human nature. Maybe it is our burden to bear that we will lose children violence.
We will lose children, but it doesn't have to be the way it is at the moment.
Yeah.
And I think that what I love to see is some of our leaders not just come up and give condolences to the family, but really look at this as a time to figure out what we can do as a time of healing to bring people together and how to make things work in a more effective way. I mean, put the folks from community conferencing or the Center for Urban Families or any other groups that we can think of in this town to join people into that community and help heal the community and that school and then spread it across the city. This is a time to maybe reach out and change something and really reach out and try to kind of say that we can do things in a different way. Can't bring this poor little child back.
Unfortunately, yeah.
We can't repair the damage to these two little boys if they accidentally killed this little girl. But you can do something to lessen the chance that this will happen again. And you can do something to heal the families and heal those little boys as well.
It's heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking.
It's absolutely heartbreaking.
It's very heartbreaking. Let's see if we get one more quick thought on here before we have to take a break and move on. And Sabrina, you're on the air.
Yes, I wanted to say I am a single parent, and it's very challenging. A lot of times people don't want to say that it's challenging and women can do it by themselves, but they cannot. This is a totally different generation where community used to be united, but it's no longer united. And when you try to, it's hard to try to raise a young man because, as you were saying, a previous caller, you try to compensate for the lost parent. You make women stronger. Mothers make women stronger than the young men.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when this one of my coworkers had said to me, she said, I don't want my son to work while he's going to school. I said, but you know, I noticed that some Africans that come over here, they work and go to school and still do what they do and make minimum wage. I said, you're not making him conducive to be a man for his household because his challenge is going to arise. And having a part-time job will help him instead of harm him. And she didn't want to. And we baby boys, we baby them like they're still a part of our womb. We have to let them go so they can become men. And one time, some men in the community can do it because women tend to want to hold on to them like they're babies, but that's how they make them weak men. And I know that from being a single parent because I have compensated. And I see that my son is not progressing due to the fact that I have been always trying to compensate. And I try to teach him now because he's at the age of 21, and I think he should be more productive, but he's not.
Well, Sabrina, we're out of time. I appreciate you being part of the show. I think it's a really, we're going to come back to this subject. I think it's really important. We want to have a chance to reflect with everybody in the community after we heard the news of the 12- and 13-year-old boy being arrested and charged as juveniles for involuntary manslaughter for the murder. I mean, for the death of that poor little girl, 13 years old, Monet Tonnage, who was found. So we have to take a very brief break and come back. And I thank you all for joining us to reflect on this. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Nick Sheridan and Dr. Larry Egbert. You remember 3 years ago, Larry Egbert was on the show. They were arrested for assisted suicide and taken to Georgia. The case was overturned. They're here to talk to us about the right to die and their work as part of the Final Exit Network. Stay with us. We'll be right back.